on Annenberg Radio News.
There's an awful lot of terror and publicity to be obtained by carrying out comparatively conventional garden variety small-scale attacks.
A former Homeland Security Secretary says we're not scared enough. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, November 4th, 2010. I'm LaTanya Kirkland. Eight students at a South LA middle school were hospitalized today after eating chocolate that might have been laced with drugs. School spokesman Patrick Sinclair says students at George Washington Carver Middle School started feeling sick after sharing a chocolate bar.
Paramedics were called. They all showed the same symptoms. And then we had all eight of them were sent off to County USC. They're doing fine. They'll be released in a couple hours.
Sinclair says one of the boys bought the chocolate at a nearby skate shop. There are thousands of homeless people in Los Angeles. Affordable and stable housing options for LA's poor and homeless are scarce. But today, a new apartment building was inaugurated on Skid Row that will take a slice out of homelessness. Albert Sabate reports.
Robert Smith came across some bad luck. A series of unfortunate events left him without money or a place to live. All his savings went to pay for a costly heart surgery, and someone stole the tools he uses as an electrician.
Things got worse. My car broke down, the city towed it. Now for a guy like me who's worked all of his life, this is a big deal to be homeless.
Smith told his story at the grand opening of a new, low-income apartment building on Skid Row.
It is not normal to be homeless, but now I can feel as though I have a normal life.
Renato Apartments on San Julian Street has 96 studio apartments for homeless and low-income individuals. Councilwoman Jan Perry was among the local and congressional representatives attending the opening.
This community has demonstrated that we believe in mixed income communities and that they can and they do work. So congratulations to all the new residents, because this is what it's all about today. You have a new home, you have people who care about your recovery.
For Smith, it's not just about having a new home, but about having a home.
My apartment, you ought to see my apartment. You walk in my apartment, I have my own bathroom, which is a big deal. All the ladies are shaking their head, yeah. This is a big deal because communal bathrooms stink.
Although thousands in Los Angeles don't have stable housing, Smith and his neighbors can look forward to living in the newly built apartments where they can begin rebuilding their lives. This is Albert Sabate, Annenberg Radio News.
Plans for a new Target store downtown are creating a buzz and hopes for a revitalized economy. Stephanie Sherman reports on today's announcement.
By 2012, locals can get everything from food to fashion at the new Target store in the 7th and Fig Shopping Center downtown. That's where Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa held a news conference to announce what he says is the biggest retail deal downtown has had in 20 years.
There's no question about this. This is a reversal of a long trend of retail leaving downtown. This is a great day for downtown Los Angeles, for people who live here and people who work here as well.
The store will be more than 100,000 square feet. The lease is signed with Brookfield Properties. Representatives from Target say there will be a heavy emphasis on food and household products. Some workers in downtown say they are thrilled with the prospect of more shopping.
Yeah. 7th and Fig, it needs that. It needs it because it's dying little by little. All these businesses are going away. There's no traffic. There's really nothing going on there. So I'm sure it will bring the shopping center back majorly.
The shopping center has been without a major retailer since Macy's left early last year. Stephanie Sherman, Annenberg Radio News.
Civil rights organizations settled a lawsuit with Los Angeles County over a troubled youth detention center. As Emily Frost reports, the settlement will affect educational opportunities for hundreds of teenagers.
In January, the ACLU, Public Counsel, and the Disability Rights Legal Center sued the county for failing to educate hundreds of young men at Challenger Memorial Youth Center in Lancaster. It's LA's largest juvenile detention center. ACLU Chief Counsel Mark Rosenbaum described graduation day for the lead plaintiff, Casey A., who was representative of many detainees.
He was unable to read a single word on his diploma. Didn't know what a diploma was, even though he was handed one. And when we asked him where he wanted to have lunch to celebrate, he said Denny's, because there were pictures on the menu, and that was the only place he could order.
Casey and other graduates will now be eligible for remedial education. Yesterday, the Board of Supervisors agreed to a settlement that will chart a new course for Challenger, long seen as the black hole of Los Angeles's juvenile justice system. Strongly worded criticism is not new for Challenger. A 2004 grand jury described the six camps at Challenger as having urine and dirty clothing all over the floors, abundant filth, and no discipline. Later, violent inmate fights at the center were found posted online. Shauna Parks of the Disability Rights Legal Center spoke of exciting developments.
We're also going to be giving them things they never had before. We're going to be giving them books to read, a library, a librarian.
Under the settlement, teachers will be held to much higher standards. They'll be supervised by a team of experts who will closely observe them and demand better outcomes. There won't be high levels of substitute teachers or unqualified teachers. Rosenbaum and the plaintiffs and their parents demand fairness in their access to education.
Why should these kids have any different qualified teachers than the teachers where your kids go, or the teachers in the public's best public schools are?
Rosenbaum says there are economic reasons for doing the right thing, too. It costs $80,000 to $100,000 a year to incarcerate an adult. And there's a 60 to 70% recidivism rate for graduates of Challenger.
If one didn't care a bit about these kids or about their futures, but mainly looked at this case as a matter of dollars and cents, this is the best economic move that this county has made in decades.
Better education, vocational training, and transition counseling will keep more graduates out of the justice system. Representatives from the Department of Probation and the LA County Office of Education were pleased with the results and speed of the settlement. And they say the reforms coming will set a precedent, both within LA and nationally. For Annenberg Radio News, I'm Emily Frost.
Tonight will be cool and partly cloudy with a low of 65. The heat will be back tomorrow with a high of 87. The weekend will be warm and sunny with highs in the 70s. Later on Annenberg Radio News, I speak with newly elected Representative Karen Bass about her plans for her district. National security and the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan were not exactly hot topics during California's election. But Michael Chertoff thinks we have become too complacent as a country. Reporter Ben Capinos listened in as the former Secretary of Homeland Security shared his security concerns at USC today.
With September 11, 2001 now over 9 years behind us, and the current focus on the economic recession, is it possible that we have lost our focus on security threats? Michael Chertoff has not. He was Secretary of Homeland Security under George Bush, and he is still active in security today.
When the house is burning down, you know, you feel you got to put the fire out. But now, right now, the house isn't burning down, and we ought to build the capabilities now so that if the fire starts again, we really have a better set of tools.
Chertoff cited the recent discovery of parcel bombs on cargo planes from Yemen that were intercepted before reaching the United States. Chertoff says the incident is an indication that terrorists are changing their tactics.
What's disturbing is it tells us we can be looking to more and more low-scale attacks against soft targets where it'll be economic impact as much or more than actual loss of life that will be the driving force.
With the evolution in tactics, Chertoff says, responsibility for homeland security should not fall solely on the federal government.
It's going to be much less a federal government problem and much more of a local problem and a private enterprise problem to deal with security.
We have not allowed an attack on American soil in nearly a decade, but Michael Chertoff emphasized that it is no time to sleep on security risks. Ben Capinos, Annenberg Radio News.
The midterm election this week was the first chance to see the decision come into play. In January, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the government can't ban political spending by corporations, labor unions, and other organizations. The case was Citizens United versus the Federal Election Commission. Caitlin Parker talked to legal scholars about this first test.
Did it seem like there were even more political ads on television this election season? If so, it may not have been just your imagination. The Citizens United case determined that corporations and unions can spend as much as they want on political ads. The Supreme Court ruled that this type of spending is a protected form of free speech. UCLA law professor Eugene Volokh believes the court case may have played a role in the wave of ads. What we don't know is how much of that spending came from corporations and how much came from unions.
Many people think of Citizens United as just a corporate speech case, but it applies every bit as much to union speech. Before Citizens United, at the federal level, in about half the states, both corporations and unions were restricted from spending their money in order to express their views about candidates. Now, both corporations and unions are free to do so.
But the unlimited spending is just one side of the equation. The other issue is transparency. There are lots of loopholes in some states when it comes to disclosing who paid for an ad. Richard Hassan is a law professor at Loyola Law School in Los Angeles. He sees this lack of transparency as a big potential problem for the future.
If we go into the 2012 election without adequate disclosure, we're going to be in a very tough situation. Voters rely upon information about who is backing candidates and measures. If you know that a candidate is backed by the NRA or the Sierra Club, that gives you a lot of information about whether or not it's a candidate you might want to back. Going forward, if we don't have that kind of information on the federal level, it'll be very hard for voters to be able to discern who is backing candidates.
Eugene Volokh sees another downside.
Indeed, there is the possibility that politicians will feel indebted to those groups that independently spent in order to support them.
Despite the uncertainties about the exact role of corporations and unions in electing candidates, one thing is clear. Outsider spending on political ads is here to stay. Caitlin Parker, Annenberg Radio News.
In January, Karen Bass will be sworn into the 112th Congress, representing the 33rd District. I spoke with her today about the challenges of a newly Republican-dominated Congress and her priorities for her new role. Now that Election Day has passed, what are your objectives in this new role?
Well, you know, first order of business is really getting organized and hiring staff and the nuts and bolts of getting ready to take office and move across country. So that's the beginning. And then after that is really looking at where things are going to be. And considering there was such a dramatic change in Congress, it's really going to take me a couple of weeks before it's even clear what direction I can proceed.
Now the Republicans have taken control of the House, what challenges do you anticipate and how do you think you might work together a compromise to meet your own objectives?
Well, I'm used to working with Republicans. I've just finished serving 6 years in the state legislature and 2 years as Speaker. And in those 2 years as Speaker, I had to work with the legislative leaders on the other side of the aisle. And so I'm used to that. I do anticipate, though, that it's going to be quite chaotic. I do believe January I'm going to find a certain level of chaos. The Republicans coming in are coming from a couple of different perspectives. The Republicans that are in office now, and then you have ones that are coming in that are going to be much stronger in terms of being conservative. And so how they are going to act with the existing Republican caucus, I think, is going to be one area of challenge. And then the change in leadership, so the Democrats stepping down from chairmanships and Republicans taking over. I think January and February is going to be pretty chaotic.
After Diane Watson's long run, you know, in Congress, what is it like following that legacy?
Well, I feel wonderful about it and extremely honored that, number one, she felt that I could follow in her footsteps. I have certainly been in contact with her very, very closely over these last 2 years, and I feel that she has done a tremendous amount to prepare me. So I definitely feel ready to serve. And with all of the challenges that we had in California over the last couple of years, I think that it has served as good preparation for me.
Right. And in today's political climate, a lot of the focus has been driven to everyday middle America. And how might you bring the focus back to cities and inner cities in particular?
Well, everyday middle America is Los Angeles. What we're facing with here, I think, is being experienced around the country, and that's record unemployment. And, of course, the unemployment in the district is high in certain areas. The overall district is relatively affluent compared to the rest of Los Angeles, but there are very serious pockets of poverty. And so many of the issues related to that I've had a long history working on and plan to continue in Congress. What I will be able to do, though, truly is going to remain to be seen.
And you were a community organizer for years. How has that work influenced your work in politics thus far, and how do you imagine it will in the future?
Well, being a community organizer has been extremely helpful to me. I used the same principles of organizing in the 6 years when I was in Sacramento. It certainly, you know, helped me obtain the speakership. It helped me get legislation passed. Community organizing, very simply said, is about building, maintaining, and connecting up relationships. That's what it's about. And so, you know, the skills and the art that you learn as an organizer is applicable, as far as I'm concerned, to many different areas of life, but it's extremely applicable to the legislative process.
Okay, and given that it may take through the month of January for things to settle, are there still any hope that you have for this time that you're stepping into?
Oh, sure. I mean, I have plenty of hope. Believe me, I wouldn't be going if I didn't. You know, I think that we are in a situation that has happened historically where anytime you're in the mid-year, 2 years into a new presidency, you see this type of change. So I think this type of change is something that happens, and it's a question of regrouping and moving forward. But, you know, I do believe that once things settle down, I will be able to accomplish things. The issues that I've worked on, foster care, education reform, health care, criminal justice issues, it'll take me a month or two before I can determine what I can start working on. The good thing about Congress is that I won't be term limited, so naturally I have to run for re-election, but I can actually have a long-term plan, and I will begin to establish that after January is over.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome.
That was Congresswoman-elect Karen Bass of the 33rd District. The mayoral race in Inglewood is still up in the air. It's headed for a runoff between current mayor Danny Tabor and challenger James Butts. Tabor came in first, but neither candidate got the majority needed to win a four-year term. Tabor says he's already started tackling Inglewood's budget problems and is confident about his chances for re-election. Butts says the city has been mismanaged and that he has the background to successfully make cuts. The runoff date hasn't been set, but it's expected to be January 11th. For more news on South LA, check out our website at annenbergradio.org. Plus, exclusively online.
Immigration is sort of the underlying subtext of almost every political question in the Latino community. About 85% of all Latinos are within two generations of the immigration experience. So if they themselves are not immigrants, parents or grandparents are.
How the Latino vote is changing the face of politics. Most Halls of Fame are devoted to players, but the Toy Hall of Fame in Oregon celebrates games. Today it inducted two new members, Playing Cards and The Game of Life. Cards were lauded for their simplicity and long-lasting appeal. They've been around since the 8th century. They joined 44 other classic toys like kites, teddy bears, the cardboard box, and Mr. Potato Head. Now we check in with Candace Brain to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
After much controversy, the city has overturned a ban on raves in the Coliseum. Also, Hasbro opened a playground in Sherman Oaks for children with autism. We spoke with their parents today on their thoughts about it. Stay tuned. Annenberg TV News is at 6 o'clock tonight.
Thanks, Candace. That's it for this Thursday. We had help today from Chris Foy, Laurel Galanter,
Ryan Nunez and Kyle Tabuena-Froley. Ariel Edwards-Levy is our producer. The executive producer is Jessica Flores. For all of us at Annenberg Radio News, I'm LaTanya Kirkland.